The University of Detroit Mercy presents another brand new episode of Ask the Professor. Today's program was recorded using Zoom video conferencing technology.
The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. The man with only a voice and a great intellect. It's Professor Jeff Boats.
Hello. How you doing? My internet seems to be shaky all of a sudden.
Feel free to grab your laptop and shake it really hard or whatever device you're using.
I hear that helps.
It's the metal plate in your head again, Jeff.
Oh, geez.
It says my internet connection is unstable. I don't know what that
means.
Don't take it personally.
Yeah, I would say if your internet connection is the only thing that's unstable and not your fabric of the federal government, I think you're doing just fine. Just fine. Dan Maggio is here with us today. What's going on, Dan?
Oh, not much. Looking forward to the weekend. Just trying to relax and not think about politics.
Oh, I apologize for making that joke then.
You could quit bringing it up.
That would be nice. It's a wild, wild world that we're living in, and we all deserve a chance to take a break. Professor Stephen Manning is here with us today. What's going on, Stephen?
Not much. Same old, same old.
The pandemic, maybe?
Hmm?
Are you referring to the pandemic?
Well, yeah, life has settled into a certain pattern to it. You know, you can't go anywhere. You can't go to the movies. I guess you can now, but I'm not going anywhere. I keep getting from Landmark Theaters, and you know, apparently they're letting 4 people in per show or something. No popcorn either, so I'm not going.
That's not a movie.
Sneak your own in.
I've done that before, actually.
Oh, I have too.
There is going to be that that big drive-in, from what I heard, advertised fairly recently. That seems like staying in your car.
Yeah.
So
popcorn is actually easier than something like Junior Mints or Raisinets. I love Raisinets at the theater, the box, you know.
They rattle.
You get in there and you take your jacket off and there's all this Raisinet rattling.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the usher looking at you mysteriously. What's that noise?
Continuing with our introductions here. And of course, it's Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
What's shaking, Dave?
Nothing much. Just another day. Mm-hmm. We were, in light of all this construction going on in the neighborhood, we're in line 2 now.
That's right. To me.
We're getting our garage built sometime in the spring.
Oh, are you going to take down the one you have?
Yep.
Okay.
Mass destruction. I can't wait.
I hope that your timetable is better than our neighbor across the street from you, who seems to be taking quite a bit of time to finish.
Oh, well, I mean, he's single-handedly doing it. I feel bad for him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's also collapsed the neighbor's fence several times, too. So, yikes. So,
Professor Beth Oljar is here and is about to tell us what large-scale construction project she has in mind for the winter.
Did some repairs last winter. I have no large-scale construction projects planned.
No worries. No worries. Was just trying to
classes, which
right.
is always a large.
I would say that those fit though, Beth. Classes are a big deal.
I got to learn how to teach on a tablet so I can do symbolic logic next fall, which I'm just the metaphysics of it elude me. I just don't quite get how the tablet works when I'm sitting in front of my desktop to access. I'm sorry, the metaphysics of technology typically just does completely overwhelm me.
I believe that Professor Mara Livesey, next in line here, was trying to send you good vibes.
But I feel so guilty because the students have been asking me for symbolic logic and I haven't taught it in 2 years. So I finally decided, like, well, you just better man up and learn how to do the thing online and get it over with. So I'm going to do it fall and winter next year.
Okay.
Beth, just learn some new words. The metaphysics of technology just sounds too daunting.
Scary.
Think of something else to call it.
But that's the only word that's actually right for the
That doesn't make it useful.
Bells and whistles have worked for generations.
Right. Instead of like
couch to 5K be like laptop to symbolic reasoning or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I literally have no idea how I'm going to teach that class unless the tablet substitutes as a whiteboard, right? So right. I write on it and then the
shadow puppets.
Yeah.
Okay. You could film yourself in front of a blackboard.
Oh, please. Mm.
Beth, you have plenty of time between now and August to...
I thought that when classes ended in mid-December, and look, here we are. So don't tell me about plenty of time. I can waste time like you wouldn't believe.
Other news, have you seen Eli Roth's History of Horror?
Yes, it's amazing. It's great.
Oh, my. Well, Professor Mara Livesey was showing you her, I think it was your iPad. Is that what you were trying to send good vibes?
That's right. I was showing my iPad. You know, if you just drag the blackboard screen onto your tablet, and then if you have a pen, you can use it just like a whiteboard. It's really straightforward. Highly recommend.
There you go, Beth.
Okay.
We're going to figure it out.
Stand back. I'm going to do science.
Teaching from a tablet has really been life-saving because in, you know, biochemistry, sure, I could just like type notes onto a slide, but actually drawing pictures is incredibly helpful. So excellent. I need a tablet to teach.
Drawing pictures? Who wants to do that?
Oh. Well, I've done
not
that
me.
You should hire Dave and he could be your illustrator.
Whoa.
Then I wouldn't have to keep apologizing to my students for my artistic ability.
Yeah.
All right. I'm taking requests.
Professor Heather Hill is joining us today.
Hello.
What's shaking, Heather?
My child turned 21 yesterday.
Wow.
That's a milestone, though, for a parent. That's a milestone.
Yeah, it's, I'm trying to come to grips with it. But, you know, she's acted 21 since she was 12. So, I mean...
Right, exactly. We're only just about 4 weeks away in the Mayo household from having two teenagers, and I don't know if I can even process those words in that order, frankly. So,
could I recommend losing your sense of smell?
I was going to say, Stephanie will have advice here.
Actually, it's a perfect transition, Professor Stephanie Conant from biology, Hello. Because, of course, we both have three sons. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, you are preaching to the choir. That's all I got to say.
We are actually doing a major bathroom renovation in the upcoming month or two. And so,
isn't it called cleanup?
Yeah, we had to go pick out like cabinets and tile stuff. And so they were arguing about like mold and like grout stuff. And I was like, be really honest, I'm worried about toothpaste and pee. Like, what is the two things that are going to show the least of those things?
So
my contractor was like, what? It's like, what's going to hide the most?
What's really? Going to be the easiest to clean?
I exactly. Mean, yeah.
You should just be concerned with the width of the drain, right? I mean,
I understand people have marble floors in their bathroom. I'm like, that's just a disaster waiting to happen.
Yes,
I slip and crack my head open.
That's a slip and fall.
Every time I hear about these sorts of things, Stephanie, I think of one of my favorite Simpsons quotes, like, doing the dishes is for the birds, Mom. How about you just feed us out of one long bowl? You mean a trough?
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I have been known to do the dollar store like tablecloths and then just wrap it all up at the end and throw it away.
What a great
tablecloth.
Efficient. Yeah, like buy one for a dollar. That's just cheap.
I thought you just tipped the table out the window. And
yeah, no, not yet.
Same sort of thing. Hey, Professor Jim Tubbs is here too.
Hello, hello.
I just love how you can sit there in your chair, Jim. Your chair fits into the frame so perfectly. Every time I get a fireside chat vibe. It's good for winter. Good for winter. Very cozy.
Well, it is cozy. It is cozy. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You getting ready for another semester of teaching, adjunct
no,
Jim?
No, I am not teaching this term.
What?
Lucky.
Lucky yes. guy.
Well, I've been retired for a year and a half. I mean, give me a break, you know?
You're supposed to
you know, Jim,
it.
It's about time you stop teaching.
Well, I just agreed to teach next fall.
Okay.
So, but, you know, I figured all the stuff I've had to put online already, why waste it? You know, I can use some of that again.
No, that's true. And last, but again, most certainly not least, we are favored by guest panelist Professor Jacob Kagi from the Department of Biology and his friends.
Yes. Good afternoon. And as someone with two pre-teenage boys, I just sit here terrified listening to stories, quietly huddled in a corner.
Oh, my gosh.
Worse, you could be like Marty Lever in my department and have four daughters, which he absolutely adores.
I'm sure I would love them. It would just be a different set of problems.
That's right. Well, folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. It's been a while since we've had some solid grout questions, I can tell you that. You stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us the questions in a number of ways, emailing us at atp@udmercy.edu. Find us on Facebook or Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. We've got a wonderful set of questions here from Kimberly Richards that are quite presidential, the questions, that is, and we will continue with those and see what we can do. How many times has the Electoral College voting not resulted in the majority needed for a candidate?
Three.
Four.
One.
Two.
So our winner, Mara, got it with two. It looks like Thomas Jefferson's 1801 and John Quincy Adams' 1825 have the Electoral College was not good enough, apparently, to be able to suss it all out. Yeah.
Well, the Electoral College truly isn't good enough.
Except for a very nice, have to say, considering it's all factoid, usually. Very, very nice opinion piece in the USA Today papers today, including the Detroit Free Press, about polycentricity saving the union over the last 4 months. Everybody should read it. It was very interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting.
Who was the first lady to give birth within the walls of the White House?
Not literally within the walls, but within the confines.
Yeah.
Her husband was in office.
Right. It says the hint here was she was the youngest first lady at 21 years old.
Was it Grover Cleveland's wife?
It was. It was Frances Cleveland. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
That was scandalous when he
it was. Quite
that's all right. Yeah. How much older was he?
About 80 years. No, but I think maybe 30 or 40.
Yeah.
This, for the record, the child that resulted from this birth is the only child of a president to be born within the White House. By the way, it's very interesting here because I wonder if we could play the old game of twist. Many people believe that Jackie Kennedy was the youngest first lady of all time, but she was how old when her husband took office?
31?
31, yeah. She was 10 years older than Frances Cleveland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was George Washington's annual salary? Let's just go for the mean here when he was president of the United States.
Seven cherry trees.
Yeah.
Dan, what was your guess?
$10.
A bag of wampum.
Oh. $200.
$1.
Yeah, $200 is my
$1,800.
No.
No.
We're all wrong.
No.
I'll guess about 100,000.
You know, you're a little bit closer than some of the other ones we've heard here. He got $25,000 for his first year. If we scaled that up to 2020 from 1789, he was earning $378,000 for doing that job.
That's about, what are they getting now, 450?
Yeah, 425, isn't it?
So it's on par, if you think about it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which vice president was forced to resign from office?
Spiro Agnew.
The 39th vice president of the United States, Spiro Agnew. Crook. Absolutely.
A super crook.
No, I believe that's absolutely true.
That's how we ended up with Gerald Ford.
That's right. It says Agnew was allowed to plead no contest to a single charge. He had failed to report $29,000 of income received in 1967 with the condition that he resign his office.
Yeah,
and I'm looking up at Stephanie's box because we have had a lot of discussion about like the difference in the gravity of things that people do. Wait, you hid microphones in a hotel room?
For shame.
Scandalous.
Well, Spiro was still getting payments from contractors from Maryland in his office in the executive office building as vice president.
Cash,
the bag man would come and visit him.
Yep.
Yeah, where somebody like Dick Cheney just had it hidden in another room. That's all.
Well, it's the same thing in the other direction, because now we look back on George Bush and think, well, when did we, how would we ever have thought he was a statesman? You know, but by comparison.
Yes.
To
a lot of things change by comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when a vice president leaves office, how is he replaced or she replaced? Does the president choose, or is there?
I think it's an appointment.
Yeah. It's it can be appointed and approved by the Senate. And the first one of those was Gerald Ford's vice president, Nelson Rockefeller.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to a special edition of Ask the Professor, in which each of the 10 professors participating in this recording session were connecting to each other from different locations, thanks to Zoom video conferencing technology. We're grateful to those listeners who submitted questions for today's show, and we welcome your questions at atp@udmercy.edu. Now, let's return to our host, Matt Mayo, with more questions for the panel.
We've got a wonderful set of questions here from Kimberly Richards. Professors, how many presidents served in any branch of the military during World War II? This is a good question.
Quite a few.
Yeah.
Kennedy, Poppy Bush.
Eisenhower.
Truman.
No, Truman didn't serve in World War II.
He didn't? Was
Carter a veteran?
Not in the military. No, he served in World War I.
Oh,
I don't think Carter's a veteran, Jeff.
Carter was in the Navy.
He was in the Navy,
nuclear submarines.
Then, Kennedy served in World War II.
Yeah,
Kennedy served in World War II. Eisenhower served in World War II. Poppy Bush did.
What, Johnson? Lyndon
Johnson did not. Nixon did. Nixon served in World War II.
Really?
So the question asked for a number, and you basically have it. What is it?
Five?
Six? Seven.
It's a magical seven. Yes, exactly. Which U.S. president paid off the entire national debt while in office?
Clinton.
No. Personally?
Balance the budget.
Political method.
Okay. Yeah.
Obama did, didn't he?
Balance the budget.
Not personally.
Well, it came off that way.
You know, Obama is not what it says here.
Mm-mm. Clinton came close.
I think Clinton.
I thought Clinton got us into a
he got us into a
surplus.
Into a surplus, yeah, but that wasn't the debt.
It actually says that here. The last president to balance the budget and retain a surplus was Bill Clinton. However, the first to get us out of national debt was
McKinley.
No, you know, it says here, it's our old friend Andrew Jackson had a big party on January 8th, 1835. Ladies and gentlemen, the national debt has been paid to zero. Pretty weird. Yeah,
he probably executed all of the debtors.
Ay, ay, ay. Who was the only presidential candidate to die during the electoral process? For the record, this candidate died the day after the national election.
Wow.
It's a good story.
Ooh.
Wow.
Did not take it well.
I'm actually finding it interesting because Kimberly always gives us this wonderful background information. There's no sense or rationale to the passing. It's just a set of facts.
And
it could have been a landslide loss. I'm sorry, Stephanie?
I just said, and they died.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's all
exactly.
It says.
You know who it was? It was Horace Greeley, who ran against Ulysses S. Grant in 1872.
Oh.
The report of the Electoral College was Grant 286, Greeley 66, and he passed away the next day.
Wow.
Poor guy.
So I feel like really he's not talked about
Jacob
enough.
Jacob is right.
For shame.
Was he the last person named Ulysses that we know of? I mean, come on. There's a name you never hear of anymore.
Yeah. All I can think of is who's buried in Grant's tomb. That's all I can think of. Who was the last U.S. president who said on television, live from New York, it's Saturday night?
Last president?
Obama?
It wasn't Obama.
Clinton?
No, it wasn't Bill Clinton.
Was it Gerald Ford?
It was Jerry Ford, it says.
Yeah.
Jerry Ford, yeah. He has the honor of being the first, last, and only president to appear on Saturday Night Live, as well as, of course, the first president impersonated. on.
Well, and that was good sportsmanship on his part, because Chevy Chase portrayed him as falling over all the furniture all the time.
Lie down, Liberty.
Which actually ended up getting Chevy Chase in a lot of trouble, because he actually did a fair bit of damage to himself and got addicted to painkillers, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my parents indoctrinating me into the world of comedy through Saturday Night Live. Yep. And I'm like, that guy doesn't look like any of the pictures I've seen of Jerry Ford.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, he just falls down a lot. I'm like, okay.
Come on. We also grew up around like Rich Little. It doesn't sound like him, doesn't look like him. You know.
Right, right.
Although I have to say, because the television is on in my living room in the background, and we just had a press conference a few minutes ago by Biden, and he's beginning to look like Jim Carrey's impersonation of him. Which is not a good thing.
Maybe that's just you, Jim.
You're projecting.
Or hoping.
Who did
1.9 trillion would be great.
Yeah.
Who did President Roosevelt allow to join the U.S. Navy during World War II?
Son. His son.
Fala.
I mean,
Say to you that it's the last person that you're thinking of, if you just went straight for the straight comedy joke, who would be the last person the president of the United States would allow to join the Navy in the middle of World War II?
Ernest Borgnine.
His wife.
Himself.
Hitler.
It was, you get it, Beth, it was Hitler's nephew.
Ooh.
Oh. What?
Ernest Borgnine sounded better.
Yep. William Patrick Hitler. Nephew of Adolf in 1942 wrote to FDR begging to be allowed to serve in the military.
Wow.
Well, I hope we made good propaganda use of that.
I really hope so. Yeah.
I just keep on wondering about people with names like that. You know, like, what, you know, do you just change your name after a while? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, what did Ulysses Hitler do in the 50s? Like,
yeah.
For the record, William Hitler went on to serve 3 years. He was a pharmacist's mate in the Navy and received the Purple Heart after having been wounded. So,
yeah, but they didn't say his own crew wounded him. That's awesome.
Oh, my. Which former U.S. president is not left-handed? Which former U.S. president is not left-handed?
Okay, Barack and Clinton are.
Are you going to give us a list, or we
just Clinton?
This one is phrased oddly, but the response, unfortunately, is also phrased oddly. So we'll do what we can.
Because it makes it sound like all of them have been left-handed, but one.
Except for like one, right?
Which
George W. Bush.
Statistically difficult to believe.
And can you fake that on your birth certificate? Like,
birtherism.
Actually, I feel like giving this one to Beth straight up, because the spirit of this question is, of the last 10 presidents.
Oh, last 10.
Five have been left-handed, when the percentage of left-handedness, geneticist.
10%.
Left-handed geneticist.
Oh,
no way.
Lefty's wrong.
No way.
It's about 10%.
Way.
1 in 9.
He's like
it's
a unicorn.
Even more rare in women. So,
of the former U.S. presidents that are not left-handed, basically what's written here is all but 8: Obama, Garfield, Hoover, Truman, Ford, Reagan, H.W. Bush, and Bill Clinton. What's most noteworthy is how many left-handed presidents we've had in the modern
era.
Kind
of crazy.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm nominating Beth.
Paul McCartney's left-handed. Da Vinci was left-handed. I'm just saying.
That's true.
Just saying.
My middle son is left-handed.
Oh, interesting.
He's an interesting duck, I gotta say. So you never know.
Neither of my kids is left-handed. It bums me out.
Yet.
We could force them to write with their
own time behind. Yeah, exactly.
There's still time.
Yeah.
Okay, 1 in 12 shot, professors. Which month of the year has had the most presidents born in it?
March,
June. January,
September,
July,
February.
Where's Kendra when we need her?
May,
October.
It's October, and Beth is on a roll. It's October. Yes, absolutely.
Duh. Everybody knows you make presidents in January.
That inauguration fever.
in just a few hours, because I go to websites now that are counting down the hours. I think that's kind of fun. We'll have 46, give or take, presidents. How many
give or take
of those 46 presidents were born in October?
43.
37.
12.
12. 14.
Eight. Come on, Dan. Help. Jeff is gone, so we need the math angle here.
Well, on average, it would be about like 3.8 per month or so, right?
So I'm 7.
So that's why I guess twice that, so 7.
Yes, eight. I think Jim and Dan win the prize. It's 6, but you approach the problem mathematically. And you
We get credit for being somewhat analytical.
Oh, man.
Don't blame me for that.
Whose official residence is on the grounds of the U.S. Naval Observatory?
The Vice President.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What, Blair House? Or is that what it is?
It's the Naval Observatory.
It's the Naval Observatory House, but only since Rockefeller. He was the first to live there.
Right. That's
Blair correct. House that's is the place here. Across the street.
Okay, gotcha.
Yep. Who was the only U.S. president who was born in the great state of Illinois?
Lincoln.
But no, born there.
He was born in Kentucky. That's right.
Let me think. Born in Illinois.
Born in Tampico, Grant? Illinois.
Was it Grant?
Nope.
Reagan.
It was Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was born in Illinois. Really?
That's where he did his radio show, too.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Who catered the wedding reception of President Woodrow Wilson in 1915? This is the greatest piece of trivia in the history of the world.
Like Panera
and
Bread?
We'll end our show for today because there's nothing that can top it in a million years.
Betty White Crocker. Castle.
KFC.
It wasn't Tyler with his cheese, was it?
I'm just going to say... I heard White Castle. I heard some snarky responses. You just need to move the needle a little bit and you'll be good to go.
What?
What year is this?
Howard Johnson's.
Nope.
It's the Golden Arches?
They weren't.
Nope.
What, KFC? Who else was around?
15.
Kentucky Fried Chicken?
You are not going to be able to digest this.
I don't know.
It was Hector Boyardee. Chef
Boyardee. Oh, wow. Yes.
Yes. Oh,
and by the way, the response is written, the man on the can is what it says here. That's Hector Boyardee. Oh, wow. Kimberly, those are just incredible questions.
Yeah, those are amazing.
There's no way to follow up after Chef Boyardee. Yeah, that's just absolutely incredible. I'm afraid that
we're having beefaroni.
This has been great fun, but I'm afraid the time has come to say goodbye. Jacob.
Bye. Happy Friday.
Jim.
Goodbye.
Stephanie.
Goodbye.
Heather.
Goodbye.
Mara.
See you later.
Beth.
Bye.
Dave.
See ya.
Steven.
Bye.
And Dan.
Goodbye.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. We're produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next time, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.